Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Jennifer Jones-Lee.
AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. It's the Bill Handel Show. Bill's going to be along at 9 o'clock. We can find out what's on his mind. In the meantime, the morning crew is here. Jennifer Jones-Lee is here. I'm here and co-hosting the show all day. Fox News correspondent, former KFI reporter, Laura Ingle.
Hey now, thanks for having me back.
Anytime. So listen. Let's talk about something that you covered, are covering. You have more knowledge about this than perhaps anybody, and that is the massive amount of flooding that happened in New York City and in New Jersey because of the remnants of Hurricane Ida. What did you see? What were people telling you up there?
Well, you know, the thing that starting at just the beginning of when we all got the warnings on our phones, that there was a storm coming. We knew that there was a storm coming. We get these alerts a lot. You know, it's hurricane season. And when we are dealing with those types of warnings, we're usually thinking about and talking about a storm coming in from the east, coming in over water, coming up the coast, coming up the east coast, heading our way. But this was so incredibly different because, as you know, Ida made her way around, up and over, and then dumped down over land. And that's why so many people were caught off guard. Though the warnings were there, and just like what we have seen in Sandy and Irene and all the other ones that I have lived through here on the East Coast, you know, a lot of people do take them seriously, but other people are like, oh, you know, it may not be that bad, you know. And then on this particular storm, you had to make the decision, are you going to go to your basement or are you going to go to the center of the house? Because we have these wild tornado warnings, which did in fact happen in New Jersey. So once this happens and the devastation again of the day of light of day comes around the day after, and you see the amounts of damage, you guys probably all saw the videos of, you know, the New York City subways like looking like Niagara Falls, and the basement apartment story is just what happened there with so many people losing their lives trapped in their basements, a lot of them not legal basement apartments, but, you know, we know that as history in New York City, that happens. But it was just so incredible to see. And all where I went on Friday, Mamaroneck, New York, which is in Westchester County, there was, and just imagine the tallest person that you know, two of them standing on top of each other, and more, 14 feet of water in Mamaroneck, where I was on Friday. And you know, people were beyond devastated. It wasn't just, oh, we got a little flood water. I mean, it rose all the way to the top of the ceiling. So the businesses that I went and talked to, and I walked around and we did our live shots walking around the mud, and you've seen those live shots before. It's not just the goods that are damaged. It's the walls and the sheetrock and the floor and the ceiling and just absolutely everything. And this one guy I talked to that ran a dollar store said, my insurance adjuster just came, and we saw all these guys walking around with clipboards, and the Red Cross was there, and you saw the insurance adjusters, and you're like, oh, good, you know, at least somebody's going to come here and tell these guys that they're okay. Most everybody we talked to said, we're not going to get any financial relief. They told us that we're not covered under the policy or whatever policy they had, and it was with tears in their eyes saying, you know, we barely made it through COVID. So there's that financial loss, the business loss, and of course, the loss of lives. It's crazy, right, because of the amount of people that died in the Gulf in Louisiana compared to what happened in the Northeast, we lost over 50 people up here. There, when I was reporting on Labor Day, I was in New Jersey. There were still four people missing. An 18 and 21-year-old were swept away in a car, and they were still looking for them on Monday. And it's just it's a type of devastation that we haven't seen. Sure, Sandy and Irene were awful, but this just felt different and reflected as much by the lawmakers that came through, and including the president coming through and talking about how this was, you know, this is code red, this is climate change, this is different than we've seen before. And now we wait to see about the federal aid that was announced. What is that going to mean in reality for these people who are just absolutely out of their homes and businesses with literally the clothes on their back?
Now, you mentioned some of these basement apartments were illegal, and I know I've been seeing headlines about it, but is that relevant to the flooding? In other words, the difference between, is there a difference between a legal basement apartment and an illegal basement apartment that one would get flooded and one wouldn't?
Well, you know, it's an important question that you ask, because it really doesn't. But if you do have a legal basement apartment, there are measures in place in many of an egress, of a way to get out. So if you have some type of an egress that will let you get out, like, I don't know if you saw the video of the NYPD officer that tried diving into the water to get into a basement apartment. And unfortunately, the door was closed. And it's just like the theory of driving your car off of a bridge. If your window isn't open, you're not getting in. So they were trying to get into that door. They couldn't. There were live wires. They had to stop what they were doing. They had to wait for the FDNY to come. And once they got in there, there were two adults and a toddler, and they didn't make it. And it's devastating to think of those people that were trapped and could not get out and tried every which way they could to claw out of maybe a window that was just quickly going underwater. And when I was speaking to police officers in New Jersey, I was out roaming around in Fairfield, and we were going around. And I was talking to them as they were searching and looking for people and helping people. And I said to the cops, I said, what is it that stuck out to you? Obviously, you know, we're standing here in this mess, but living through what you just did. And they said it was just the intensity and the speed. We just had never seen it before. Yes, we flood here. We were along the Passaic River in New Jersey that day. And the water rises, and people generally watch it, and they wait for it to go to a certain level, and they go, okay, now we got to get out. But it wasn't like that this time. But back to your question about the illegal basement apartments, I don't know how much it would matter in these particular cases in Queens. But in theory, if you have a legal basement apartment, you have something that has been sanctioned, something that has been looked at, and you've got a way to get out. A lot of people didn't have a way.
Okay, Laura, thank you for that. Let's get a news update from Jennifer Jones-Lee. And then, Laura, we're going to talk about people are working still to this day to identify victims from 9/11. And in fact, they just identified a couple more because they have advanced techniques. So I want you to tell us about how they're doing it and who's doing it and whether there have been any hiccups along the way. This been, you know, it's 20 years ago, and there's still every day there are people looking at human remains and trying to identify them to give closure to their families. This is KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
The day's Tom Sawyer, he gets high on you, and the space he invades, he gets by on you.
KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. It's the Bill Handel Show. He'll be along at 9 o'clock. We'll see what's on his mind today. Co-hosting the show all morning, Fox News correspondent, former KFI reporter, Laura Ingle, and fan of classic rock.
Yes. Former rock DJ.
Oh, is that so?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that explains a lot.
KRXQ, 93 Rock Sacramento. Spent some time up there doing the evening show, hosting Metal Shop, local licks, stuff. True story.
Oh, fantastic. Listen, this is fantastic, too. 9/11, the event, was 20 years ago minus 3 days. Every day, pretty much, people have gone to work, and their job is to identify the victims. There were so the destruction was so devastating, and the towers fell. And, you know, I don't want to get too graphic or gross, but bodies were not in a state where it would be easy to identify who it is. Yeah. And they're sitting on a massive collection of body parts. And they've been testing and testing with DNA. And they have new techniques now that are allowing them to continue 20 years later to make progress in this quest. And I believe they will never stop unless they manage to eventually identify every single victim. And that's when they will stop.
Right. And the work, as you mentioned, has been painstaking. And you're right. I think it will go on. And I think that they do know that there are some people who, unfortunately, were incinerated and that, you know, we're not going to get the total. However, just two more victims. We're learning this today of the terror attacks at the World Trade Center were identified. And one story that sticks out is a woman named Dorothy Morgan, and she lives out on Long Island, Hempstead. She is the 1,646th victim to be identified through this ongoing DNA analysis of these unidentified remains. And, you know, when you take a look at what they've been doing, this is all being done at the New York City Medical Examiner's Office and through, as you mentioned, advanced DNA testing. So, of course, 20 years ago, they had a certain way they were doing it. Now, as each year passes and, you know, the pandemic slowed down some of this process to a degree. But this new technology that is being used, this woman, this family member of Dorothy Morgan doesn't even really remember providing the reference sample nearly two decades ago of her mother's DNA. And she just got a knock at the door and they said, we have identified your mother finally. And so 20 years later, this woman and those family members that are getting that similar knock have to decide, all right, so now they are going to give us possession of whatever is left of my loved one. And do I want to have a funeral? Do I want to have some kind of, you know, what do I do now? So some people are being forced, you know, I mean, they wanted the answers, but now they're faced with something that they didn't expect was even going to happen. And but what's really interesting about the DNA technology that they're using, and the city's chief medical examiner, Dr. Barbara Sampson, said it well, that they consider this a sacred obligation of using these refined techniques. But they go with these lab workers, you know, until recently were using a mortar and pestle to manually crush the bone fragments when the project first began. But now they have been going into what they call a bone mill using fragments that are put in these glass tubes, frozen with the help of liquid nitrogen. They put them in a bone mill machine that shakes it until they can get the extraction that they need, and working with the new technology to pull that DNA to make those matches. And Jennifer and I were in New York City for the first time together covering 9/11. I had never been here before. And I think everybody who watches the reels of 20 years ago and anybody that was here knows and remembers the people walking around with the pictures. Have you seen my loved one? That was the first thing that I encountered walking around with my KFI tape deck downtown, of just encountering all these people. Can you help? And here we are 20 years later, and some of those people are getting exactly that. They're finding out where their loved ones were and how they are being identified now.
All right. It's good to hear that they're never going to give up. It gives hope to the people who still are dealing with a missing persons situation, basically. Until your loved one is identified, it's a missing persons case. And this brings closure to that case, and I'm sure closure for a lot of these families of the victims. Let's get a news update from Jennifer Jones-Lee, and then Handle on the News Late Edition, right here on KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
You gotta fight for your right to party.
Your pops quit your smoking, man, he says, no way.
KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Good morning, Bill Handel Show. Bill's coming along about half an hour from now. We'll find out what's on his mind today. But first, it's a very special Handle on the News Late Edition. Jennifer Jones-Lee is here. I am here and co-hosting the show all morning. Fox News correspondent, former KFI reporter, longtime friend, and co-conspirator of Jennifer Jones-Lee, Laura Ingle.
Look, I do have photos. It's true. But we will not share those.
All right, here I go. I'm going to throw, this is the only time I'll try to like embarrass anybody or anything this show.
Uh-oh.
But.
Turn his mic off.
Most, because you guys spent a lot of time together and you did a lot of reporting together. So, most embarrassing or unusual thing that one of you ever had to borrow from the other one.
Oh, Lord. Borrow? Boyfriend?
Vehicle? No, that's not embarrassing.
That's one I'd have to think about. I mean, we have, I think, many, many embarrassing moments between the two of us, but I don't think we ever...
Motley
I mean,
Crue.
The worst thing we ever... Oh, Motley Crue. That was a
Cal
night.
Expo. Yeah. Anyway.
I just remember exchanging like batteries or cassette tapes or mic cords or stupid stuff like that. But I don't remember anything super scandalous on the borrowing. Sorry, Wayne.
How boring.
Now, if you want to talk Motley Crue.
Disappointing. Well, fine. Tell the Motley Crue. Let's go.
No, those were embarrassing stories.
Right.
You can't bring it up and then say and beg off. Ladies and gentlemen, I will do a countdown and then we will hear the Motley Crue story. 3, 2, 1, go.
There was a lot of lipstick. There was
a dented hood. Dented hood, yeah.
And a guy named Teddy. I'll leave it at that.
Wow.
You're really... Really,
I'll tell you what. We will come up with some history to share with you at a later
time. We're not taking curated, committee approved, quote embarrassing stories, because it'll be like, and one time I was eating a hot dog and then I went on the air and there was a tiny little thing of mustard on my shirt. Oh my God, it was so embarrassing. No, that's not what we want.
I'll tell you what. I do think that we shared some swimwear cover-ups and baseball hats and stuff.
We were on a houseboating trip together with
all of the ladies that worked at KFBK in Sacramento. All of us on a houseboat for a couple of days in the sun in the Sacramento Delta. And there are photos of that somewhere. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, you know, there's just a lot of love. Like we've talked about before, she came and stayed at my apartment in West Hollywood when I lived up the block from Barney's Beanery, and we were covering trials together. And, you know, we had to make a bedroom out of a closet so she could broadcast it to KGO in San Francisco.
In a closet, a literal closet.
All right, nice try. Whose car got dented?
Our friend Maria's.
Who dented it?
Our friend
you're gonna
Mike.
Have to take Mike. Oh
yeah, our friend Mike, who actually is also a radio guy who recently passed. So for people who Mike Jones, who did mornings in Chico forever, I'll give you this. There was a moment that we all felt patriotic on the Delta on one of the houseboat trips, and we flashed a passing by Navy ship.
Wait a minute.
Oh.
There you go. That's
I don't know if everybody. Wait a minute.
Scandalous.
I don't know if everybody was involved in that. Stand by.
You were there. I have the picture.
I was there, but I don't think that there was any involvement on my part.
Hold on. The back line is ringing. Just a second. Hello? KFI? Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir, I will. And thank you for your service.
It's our patriotic duty.
Retired Navy Colonel. He didn't give me his name, but he said he remembered that.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome, sir.
All right, let's start Handle on the News. Late edition, Jennifer Jones Lee, Laura Ingle, and me. The lead story, the majority of LA Unified School Board either favors or leans toward favoring a student vaccine mandate. This is something that the teachers union would like very much. And they may get it.
I mean, it's teed up for pushback.
Well, so is anything anybody tries to do anymore in this country.
Interesting. You go from what they're doing in LA County to what they're doing in San Bernardino County, which seems to be working. So normally you bring in a third party, and a lot of times it's like, oh, great, here's just one more layer of, you know, red tape that we have to go through. But in this case, they have a COVID liaison on all the campuses. And what this person does is they're from this company called AMLLC. And what they do is this program is tailored to meet each of the district's particular needs. So say a kid comes down sick. And they don't know, does the kid have COVID or does the kid just have really bad allergies because it's that time of year, something like that. It is this liaison's job to then keep in contact with the family, figure out what the kid is going through, decide then what that kid's class should go through, what the protocols should be. And then this way, it's not just some blanket policy that goes across the district. They're looking at each individual school and taking each individual classroom into this equation that they put together. And this seems to be working really, really well. Not a blanket policy, but look at each class individually.
I like it.
I do too.
And also that person is operating maybe with less of the political pressure if it was a school official making these kinds of decisions. So that's what's good too. However, none of this may matter because COVID may not even be the thing anymore. Isn't that right?
I mean, we are hearing that there is this new virus or a different virus that's even deadlier than COVID-19. Just when you think that things are settling down or you've got a handle on it and your booster is scheduled, whatever the case may be. Now there's something going on in India, a new virus, a rare virus, they say is deadlier and one that health officials are saying could start a global pandemic. Nipaya, is that what we're going with? N-I-P-A-H? If that's not on your radar, it will be
I don't know, because I'm going to guess since it's been discovered in India, the original word may not be an English word.
Right.
Or may not be of English. There, it could be Hindi or something like that.
Well, I mean, it's a 12-year-old boy has died of it. And now they're saying that he had already visited two other hospitals before he died, putting him in contact with, of course, you know, hundreds of other people. And there are up to 11 right now showing potential symptoms. So if you just rewind the tape in your head of when we first started hearing about COVID-19 and how it seemed oh so far away, and then suddenly it was at our doorstep, hopefully that is not the case here. However, you know, the World Health Organization putting it on people's radar because it is deadly and it can spread from person to person. So not a good deal.
All right, Jen, let's get a news update from you. And then we have to talk about what the hell is going on with the State Department, who said they were going to do everything they could to get people out of Afghanistan, but it looks like there's at least one thing they could do that they will not do. It's KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. We are finishing up Handle on the News late edition. Jennifer Jones Lee, me, and co-hosting the show today, Fox News correspondent, former KFI employee, and boy, was I shown some pictures during the break of the younger days. Laura Ingle. All right.
Well, hello.
I would like to point out these pictures that you were seeing are from 25 years ago.
Okay, fine. I still took screenshots of them.
So. Good thing there was nothing inappropriate.
Right.
Hey, speaking of inappropriate, I don't know what to make of this deal with the State Department. You know, we have people still over in Afghanistan. We have Americans still there, allies still there, people who helped us. And now private people and organizations are chartering flights to get the people out. One of them is an attorney named Eric Montalvo. He's a former U.S. Marine. He's organized a series of evacuation flights. And the State Department is playing a very weird semantical game. Because he got an email from the State Department and it said, in order for you to get these people out, it may require some indication that we, State Department, approve of this charter flight. We will not approve of it, but we will provide an email or a letter that says we have no objection to the flight. Because if you want to fly from Afghanistan to, it doesn't really matter, pick a country, France. I guess the State Department is saying France may want to know that the State Department approves of you flying to France there, but we won't say that But we will say we don't oppose it or we have no objection. Why? What is the thinking here to split semantical hairs in a way that could leave people stranded? But that's what's going on.
Yeah, it's very confusing. I mean, I'm sure that there's some political game, not game, but political tactics that are going on behind the scene. But it's just, if you're looking from the outside in as what's going on, you're right. This just doesn't make any sense.
And they're telling him that these charter flights can't land at any Department of Defense base. And most of the countries in the Middle Eastern region are off limits as well. But what is it? The State Department, I guess it's this. They don't want to say, if somebody's trying to fly to Qatar, I don't know if that's relevant. And the State Department, for political reasons, doesn't want to be on record as saying we approve.
Well, they're also saying, they're also saying too, that the U.S. officials at least are pointing to possible security threats. Saying that they just don't have the resources on the ground to fully verify the flight manifests, the people who are on them. I mean, that's at least, you know, what we're reporting at Fox News. It's on our website because apparently we had somebody that was able to review some of these emails that are going back and forth. But that seems to be where they're hanging it.
So it's a CYA. In other words, if we approve of the flight and then a bad person is on the flight, then we're in trouble. But if we didn't approve of it, we can wipe our hands clean and take no responsibility. So that's what it is.
And then who?
All right, Laura, thank you, because that at least I can wrap my head around why they're playing this game then.
My question is, who, though, is saying you get the okay to get on the plane? So is this the new Taliban government that gives that okay, that says whether your papers work or not? And then are we working in conjunction with this new Taliban government? I don't think so, based on the fact that we're saying we're not recognizing them. So anybody who would get on any plane that the Taliban government said was okay and authorized, I would think that that wouldn't jive with the U.S. officials, right?
Yeah, that's a mess. Right. That's because we pulled out, so we don't have people there to vet the people, and that's why all of this is. So let's say there is a bad guy. All the good people now are stuck.
Yeah.
Because of the possibility that a bad guy will slip through.
All right, there's a guy named Eli Vera, and he was a chief. And I say was. It's not that anything happened to him. He didn't pass away or anything with the LA County Sheriff's Department. But he entered the race against Sheriff Alex Villanueva. So in a letter last week, Villanueva notified Vera that he was being demoted from chief to commander. And it was a sheriff's department spokesperson who indicated the unapologetic move was made to shut out a competitor from planning meetings that the sheriff regularly holds with senior staff.
Well, because he was going to run against or did run against the sheriff. But they're saying, you know what? And they're saying this is what you do in any organization. You can't have somebody who became an opponent of the sheriff attending all of the high-level meetings of the department. You have to do this.
Right. And they're also...
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and just reading through the story, and the sheriff is on everybody's radar there in Los Angeles, and I've been glued to the podcast Lost Hills about the Malibu sniper, listening to everybody talk about Villanueva. But nonetheless, as part of the demotion, Vera being transferred from his job overseeing the department's technology and support division to a lower post in the court services division. That is part of, you know, what you just mentioned about no longer attending those weekly executive staff meetings. So this is getting very interesting, you guys.
Does this impact his pay? Good question.
Well, it might.
And then also,
unless you drop down a level, but you move up within the lower grade, you move up the steps within the grade, and they kept his salary the same.
Yeah, because I was wondering if it was a salary thing, but also how this affects his retirement, because most places, it's not just about how many years you've been with the place, but at what level of pay you're retiring at.
Well, they're claiming there's a law that requires this, but nobody will say what law is requiring it, so looks kind of weird. Okay, let's get a news update from Jennifer Jones-Lee, and then Bill Handel will be here. We can find out what is on his mind this morning. It's KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.